Welcome to the Sporting Spotlight here on Dumsteady FM with me, Breffni Early. My guest this week has set the world alight. Last Sunday week, she played in Women's National League and scored an unbelievable strike, which has become a YouTube sensation over the last week or so. Stephanie Roach of Piedmont United, welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much. Hello.
Stephanie, we're going to come back to that goal because that has just literally set the football world alight over the last week. I want to bring it back a couple of years first, and let's talk about the young Stephanie Roach as a child growing up. Tell us a bit about, your life at that time.
Okay, well, I started playing football really when I was very young, to be honest. I would have been 6 or 7. I'd be playing out on the streets just like, and my dad was a coach with Valvio and Shankill at the time. My brother also played as well, so I used to kind of go to them matches and obviously just at half-time kick the ball around, little things like that. It wasn't until I was like about 11 I got into actually playing for a club team. I played for Valvio and Shankill on the 12th boys team. And then from then on I went to Cavantilly with Mick Caulfield as my manager at the time. And then from then...
Was that all with boys at that time?
When I played for Shankill it was with all boys. But I only played there for a year because of the age restriction.
Do you feel, looking back now, that maybe playing with the boys added something to your game that you've brought with you over the years? Because girls who play, you tend to can pick the girls who've played with boys at some stage in their youth.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And even when I finished up playing for Valvio and Shankill, like, I'd be playing on the streets with the lads until I was 16 or 17. So, like, I always kind of got involved with the guys and they never took it easy on me as well, which was good. So I think definitely it did help me, like it helped me kind of strengthen up my game a little bit.
Okay, so you moved on to Cavantilly then at that stage, still in the local area. How many years did you spend with them?
I was there for 2 or 3 years I think, and at the time I was also I joined the Wicklow Academy with Tony Pouch and Dave, and they asked me if I'd like to go to play for Stella Maris. So from there I went to Stella Maris and I played some 3 years, I think it was there, and it was brilliant. That was probably one of the highlights of
The Wicklow Academy, and Tony Pouch in particular, is credited with a whole host of girls who have gone on to play underage and senior international for Ireland. There's yourself, there's Anya Gorman, Susan Hackett, and plenty others of names. How important was that? Because obviously the club structure is all well and good, but actually getting singled out and brought into a proper structure, and he was well ahead of his time in terms of how the FAI now have the Emerging Talent Programme. What kind of an influence was that on you?
A big, big influence, to be honest with you. And even after the academy, Tony Pouch has been really good to me. He's even still kind of giving me advice, which is great. But the academy at the time was brilliant. They had, as you said, like Savanya O'Gorman, Susan Hackett. There was plenty more, like even younger girls, Niamh Kearney was playing at the time, Emily Annie played for us as well. So there was a lot of young good players, and as I said, Tony was a big influence, and I'm sure Annie would have said the same on all of our lives just regarding football. And like even little things away from football, when we went away, he'd send me and Annie 30 or 40 euro credit just to make sure we could ring home. We weren't homesick, little things like that. He was very, very good to us. So
in terms of Stella Maris, because that's really probably the first time you came on the radar of most people involved in women's football. Stella Maris, obviously, it was a concerted effort from Tony Pouch to bring a group of you together to go to Stella.
Yeah.
But you came up together and you pretty much won everything around you for a couple of years there.
Yeah, well, it was himself, Tony and Sean Ryder at the time who were in charge when I was there. And as you said, they got a good few of us to go up and we done really well. We had a really good team. There was younger players, even the likes of Rosie McGuire, she's playing with Shamrock Rovers at the minute, but she would have been really young. Amy Ryan, obviously, who was really good with the under-17s, under-19s for a few years. We had a really, really good team, and as you said, we had a good structure and a good setup as well, which is good. And Tony and Sean were brilliant with us. Like they made it fun and enjoyable for us, as well as kind of having that serious element, which is important for young girls, obviously, who kind of want to have fun and not just have that you have to win type of attitude. But at the time, we were lucky enough that we had a really good team and we did win a lot, so it was great. It was a really good time.
That team broke up when you kind of hit 16, 17, and you all went different directions. Lonnie went to Piedmont, you went elsewhere. What happened? Why, I suppose, did you not follow Lonnie if you were such good friends with her? Why did you go to, I think you went to Raheny straight away after that, or was
it? Yeah, I can't really remember why, actually, to be honest with you. I don't know. It just the way it happened. I think my dad was obviously friends with Derek Cook at the time, and he was manager in Raheny, and we just got talking one day, and it was just, obviously, with Stella Maris breaking up, I didn't really know where else to go, so I went there after that, and was with them for a year and then went to Dundalk. So it was a bit of traveling involved for me when I went to Dundalk, obviously, but I had a good time up there as well.
In terms of, I suppose, the influence from Stella Maris, because that team that was together was very, very competitive, but they all went different directions. It's been a feature in women's sport, maybe not in the last couple of years, but where teams kind of come and go and they have cycles and then they break up. Like, I'm thinking of the old Shamrock Rovers side, then UCD, then St. Francis, and Stella Maris would have been there, thereabouts, in terms of maybe not quite at the level of those teams, but definitely in the top reaches of the game in the country. How much of a shame is it that that team actually broke up? Because if you'd kept that together, there would have been probably plenty of national trophies in the hunt there.
Yeah, well, definitely. I've always kind of spoke to my dad about that, to be honest with you. Like, obviously, I love playing at Stella Maris. We had some really good friends at the time. And as you said, we played really good football. But it's just the way it went at the time. The team fell apart because there was different managers who couldn't commit and stuff like that. But I don't really know. It's hard to say. I think maybe, obviously, if we had kept going, it would have been brilliant. And as you said, we would have won more and probably been in the National League now at this stage with that team. But it's really hard to keep girls together. Obviously, different girls get different interests at different times as well. So it's hard to kind of, even with boys, it's the same problem. People stop playing when they get to a certain age. They don't really be as interested as they are. So
what time did international football come knocking? What age group was your first appearance?
I remember I played for Cabin Teely against actually Stella Maris, and Noel King was at the match at the time. He came up to me and spoke to me and told me that I'd done really well in the game, and he encouraged me and said that if I kept up what I was doing, I'd be definitely in the international squad in the future, which, like, as a 14-year-old, it was brilliant. I had great respect for him and thought it was brilliant to hear him saying that to me. And actually, as I went on, Noel King was really brilliant to me throughout my international career and getting me back involved and getting me into the senior team as well. But as I said, at the time, it was with Cabin Teely at 14, and I went for trials at the 17s and got in there. And then from then on, I just got into all the other teams, which is great.
Do you remember your first game?
Yeah, my first game for the 17s was against Scotland, and I scored.
Always nice to kickstart the career with a goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite as developed then as it is now, because the structures are much, much tighter than what they would have been, say, when you were 14. A couple of years ago, but
yeah.
What was your experience coming through the age groups?
In fairness, we were treated very well, but as you said, at the time, women's football and girls' football was only a growing sport, and it hadn't got to the stage where it is now, where girls under 17 done so well last a few years ago in the World Cup and the European Cup. Like, but we were always treated really well, and we were always given that respect. But it's got bigger and bigger as it's gone on, so. It's been great now to see.
Do you look back at that under-17 World Cup in 2010 and kind of say, why couldn't we have done that? Is there a little bit of jealousy at all there?
And I wouldn't say there'd be jealousy. Like, we'd be delighted for it to see. Like, I'd watch every sport, well, a lot of sports with Irish people involved, and I'd always hope that they'd be doing well. So I'd never say there was jealousy. I was delighted for them, and it was great to see it happening, especially with Noel King in charge, because, as I said, he was such a great man and a great manager and really good to all the girls in football in Ireland, if you ask me. But, no, I was delighted. Obviously, it would have been great to get there when we were 17, but as you said, it wasn't as big as it was at the time, so it just shows how much football has grown to think that an Irish women's team has got to the World Cup and got to do so well.
You mentioned your dad was a coach back in Bellevue, Shankill. How big an influence was he on your early childhood in terms of football?
Well, my family, like, always had football around. My brother's were big Man United fans, and we'd always be either watching football on the telly, and as I said, with my dad coaching, we weren't watching, I'd be going up and watching, or if we weren't watching on TV, I'd be going watching it with him. And then as I got like to 11 and started playing for the club teams, like, my dad hasn't missed a match since then, unless something really important that he can't make it. But he's been to nearly every match, and he's brought me to training sessions in Wicklow and Dundalk and the AOL, spent days and weekends in the AOL with me. So, like, obviously he's been a great influence on my football, and he's done everything he can possibly do to give me the push that I need.
I suppose after a bit of a nomadic time with Raheny and Dundalk, you settled at Pima United. The Champions League expedition was probably the start of most people's careers at Pima that are with the club at the moment. Yourself and a couple of others joined specifically for that. Yeah. That must have been a fairly exciting background. Was it 2011?
Yes, 2011.
What was it like, I suppose, the week away? I know I was there with St. Francis the previous year. We didn't quite make it through. He actually managed to break that glass ceiling for Irish clubs and actually progress to the knockout stages. The group stage, Tell us a little bit about the experience of going away for the week and the games themselves.
It was brilliant. As you said, I only joined the team up about, it must have been a month before we went, and obviously we were in training a lot before we went, and we got ourselves ready for our first game was against Rayo Vallecano, so obviously we knew they were going to be a good team, so basically we tried to concentrate on keeping ourselves nice and tight and compact, and obviously try to keep them from scoring and hopefully to score on the break ourselves, and that was our first game, so we prepared ourselves really well for that. And when we went over, obviously I think that was probably, I know we lost it, but we played really, really well in that game. It was probably our best game in terms of defending. Like, we defended for our lives, and obviously it was just kind of a lapse in concentration, and we lost the goal in the 89th minute, which was just devastating. But after that, obviously, we had a bit of confidence because we had played so well, and in the next two games, we were obviously able to go and attack a bit more, and we won, I think, 7-0 in the first game, and then 5-2, I think it was, in the third game. So, like, we had a really, really good tournament, and good week, so it was great. It was brilliant to be a part of that, and obviously I scored a few goals as well, which is great.
Oh, it was nice again. If you come back, you came back from that qualifying group to the start of the Women's National League, the first ever Women's National League run by the FAI, and as well as that, you had the clash with Paris Saint-Germain in the qualifying or the knockout stages of the competition. Tell us a bit about the first season of the Women's National League.
As you said, we just came back from the Champions League, and we were in flying form, and we were hoping, obviously the FAI put so much effort into getting the Women's National League, and with there only being six teams, it was a small league, but they were trying to make it as professional as possible, which was great for us, and obviously after the Dublin leagues and stuff like that, it had been a bit messy, but it was great to have that bit of structure behind the league and get it going properly. And as I said, we were flying after the Champions League, and we started our first game, I think it was against Wexford, and had a great start, and then obviously we had to concentrate on the PSG game too, which was obviously getting an awful lot of promotion and a lot of recognition after doing so well. So it was kind of a hectic start to the league with that coming up, so I think we set it off really well, in fairness to us, and then we had the Champions League game to concentrate as well.
The Champions League game, particularly the clash against Paris Saint-Germain at home, was the first time that women's soccer really had managed to break into the lexicon of the normal media. I know it was featured on the RTE News, and it was pretty much across all the papers for a couple of days before and after the game. Were you aware of the media coverage of that event, or was it something that just kind of, you were focused on the game, it didn't really come into the equation?
No, I think it was hard not to be, in fairness. Like, a lot of people knew about it, and in fairness to Manchester United, like, they put it out a lot to get a bit of advertising to try get as many people to the game as possible. So, like, we kind of knew, and obviously there were camera crews at our training sessions and stuff like that, which is great to see, because it gave us a bit of recognition and obviously made us feel like we were being looked on properly, and the game was going to be taken really serious by the Irish media, and they were there putting a bit of effort into making, like, it public for everybody to see, which was great. But, like, obviously we were concentrating on the game, and in the end we lost the game, which was devastating. But I think we held out for 70 minutes, I think, and they scored a few late goals, which was disappointing. But as I said, they were, like, a professional team, and we're only amateur, so we done ourselves proud, in fairness, and we had a great crowd at the match, which was great. So
well, listen, we've reached that part of the show. We're going to take a little bit of a break from the interview, and we're going to pose you a couple of questions in the spotlight sweat.
Okay.
Now, Áine Gorman's done this before, so if you don't beat her score, you can't. You're going to have to change clubs, okay?
Okay.
So she hit five. So we're looking for more of the same from you. Okay. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, off you go.
Okay.
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
Who won the 2013 NBA championship?
NBA?
Yep.
Oh, Miami Heat?
Yep. Name three of the events in the modern pentathlon.
Oh, pass.
In his first ever marathon, he won an Olympic silver medal. Who is he?
Mo Farah.
John Tracy. Who was the first Irish woman to win an indoor world athletics championship?
Pass.
Two Irish cyclists won stages in the Tour de France and Vuelta de España respectively earlier this year. Name either.
Nicholas Roach.
Yep. Name one Irish player who has won a UEFA Women's Champions League.
Emma Byrne.
Yep. Who is the only Irish golfer to be ranked world number one?
Warren
Townsend. Nope, Rory McIlroy. Which Irish cricketer holds the record for the fastest one-day century in World Cup cricket?
Irish cricketer?
Yep.
Pass. laughing off.
Whitclare teenager scored a hat trick of goals in the All Ireland hurling final replay.
Oh, what's his name? I can see his face and everything. Oh, I don't know, Pat.
Shane O'Donnell. 1, 2, 3 correct.
Oh, God.
Not the worst we've had on the show. the three of the events in the modern pentathlon: show jumping, swimming, running, shooting, and fencing. John Tracy won a silver medal at his first ever
match. I knew that as well. That was just...
You're going to kick yourself on the next one. Dervla O'Rourke was the first Irish woman to win an indoor world championship athletics championship. Rory McIlroy, world number one. Kevin O'Brien was the Irish cricketer who holds the record for the fastest one-day century in World Cup cricket. He scored it against England in 2011. So there is three Stephanie Roaches total.
Okay.
Not the best, but definitely not the worst. We'll let you off on that one. But to get back to the interview, I'm very interested to talk to you about the progression in women's football over the last few years, particularly since the National League came in, and you've been involved from before that at a senior international level, right through to kind of today, and where the Women's National League, I suppose, with the explosion of exposure that you've given it in the last week, has just been phenomenal. Tell us about, in your own opinion, where the league has made improvements over the last 3 years.
I think they've brought that kind of professional element to it, like with the likes of every team having to have the one pitch and have to have good facilities and stuff like that. And I think having only the six teams in it was obviously short in numbers. It's good to have like all the good players maybe at one or two, or all the teams. Like, so it's good to have that like competitive edge to every game. And they've done all they can as well. In fairness, there's a lot of advertising. You hear it on the radio a good bit as well. But I think maybe they can do, well, not these, but obviously we have more interest in football or in women's football now. We'll get more and more people wanting to sponsor it and hopefully try to promote it a bit more.
Well, Bus Éireann definitely got their money's worth this week when the strike. Let's talk about the video, because it's what everyone's been talking about all week, and not just in terms of women's football or even Irish football, but in world football. Go on, name drop a little bit. Tell us some of the names of people who've been talking about. I know you're dying to.
Well, the first person to retweet it and say goal of the season was Matt Letizia. So that was great. I think obviously everyone knows he's scored some really, really good goals.
Matt Letizia just didn't do playing goals, did he?
No, he didn't. He scored some really good goals. And obviously I'd watched the goal shows and that on TV. So it was great to see that he's tweeting me that same goal of the season with the goals he scored over the years. Who else? Darrell Green tweeted me, and he also said, or had a few words back to me as well, which was good. I kind of had a little chat with him. David Moyler off the Irish team, actually, he was really nice. He tweeted me twice, and then tweeted me again to say it was great to see I was getting recognition on the news and stuff like that, which was nice of him. Piers Morgan.
For all the Arsenal fans out there, quite interesting. Obviously, a big football fan himself.
Yeah, and he also said that he also retweeted it to Jack Wilshere, yeah, and said to get Arsene to sign me up, which is nice as well.
It's funny you mentioned. I know Gary Lineker was in there as well, but you mentioned Piers Morgan and Arsenal signing you up, and I suppose some people who might not be that familiar with the league will be saying, oh, maybe she'll get a big name signing out of this, but she could get a contract in continental Europe, in the UK, in the US. Is that something you're even interested in, or are you quite happy being the top scorer in the National League and being in the running for the league title every year here?
I think, like, obviously, I do love playing for females, and the league is great, but growing up, as I said, the amount of effort that you put into football over here, and all the girls do, I think that'd always be kind of in the back of your mind that it'd be nice to go professional and maybe like get like a good club in like maybe America or somewhere. Just like, obviously it'd be in the back of my mind, I would like to go, but as I said, I'm happy with females at the minute, and it would have to be a big, like, a good deal to get me to go away from where I am and move away from my family and that. But
like, this isn't uncharted territory, because your current PMOUT teammates, Anya Gorman and Julianne Russell, both played in the WSL in the UK with Doncaster Bells. Louise Quinn, who was with you last season, is now in Scandinavia, as is Maeve de Burke from the Irish squad, and Shannon Smith and Fiona Sullivan's in Germany, I think. So, there is a firm foundation of girls playing at least semi-professionally, if not full professional football.
Yeah, there are a lot of girls who have played it over the years, who have been playing away, and obviously seeing that, you're kind of thinking, Jesus, I could definitely be good enough to go and play over there. But as I said, like, I haven't had any great offers yet, but if there were great offers to come in, maybe I would have to have a think about it, because as an international player, I would like to be playing like at a high level, and I love playing for Piemont, obviously, as I said, and at the minute my focus is to try to win the league and get into the Champions League again, which was brilliant the last time. So, but as I said, if a good offer did come in, I would have to think about it.
You have worn the green jersey. I'm going to try and be diplomatic about it, but how many years have you played senior football for Ireland?
I've been playing for the senior team 5 years, 6 years.
Okay, and how many caps over that period of time?
25.
Okay, so it's a reasonably good haul at this moment in time. You're still young, there's plenty of time to get plenty more caps, but at the moment you're not in favour with the international setup. What's your knowledge of that? Is it just a case of you just don't get invited in, or how does that work?
Well, what happened was, like, I was involved for the whole Cyprus Cup and all that, and I done quite well over there, but then come the Austria game, I was left out, and I kind of wasn't really told why I was left out. I was just left out, and then since then I haven't been back in. So obviously, like, with me playing for Piemont in the league and all that, and I've been trying my best to get back in. Like, we didn't have a great start to the season, I'm not going to lie, but the last two or three games I started playing well again, so I'm hoping I might get a chance to get back in again. And obviously I love playing for my country, and I'm a proud Irish person, so it would be great to get back in. Like,
in terms of, and again, I'm very aware that you're still a current member of that greater squad, and there's every likelihood you will be involved in the future, so I don't want to ruffle any feathers, but what's the communication like when you're left out of a squad? Do you get a note or a little message to say, you know, actually we're going to leave you out, or is it just a case of the squad is issued and you're not in it?
It's different. It can be different on different occasions with different people, like, but as I said, the last match I wasn't told, so I understand, like, managers have their decisions to make and this, that and the other, but like that's their job, they have to do it, they can't keep everyone happy, which is obvious, like, but as I said, at that time I hadn't heard, but there have been times where I was left out, maybe under 19, so for a while contacted, so it's not, it doesn't happen like that all the time, just sometimes you might not find out why you were left out, or you might not be told, which isn't great, and obviously you want to know why or what you can do to improve to get back in.
Yeah, well, you've definitely made them aware that you exist in the last couple of days anyway, that's for sure. I have to say though, I always wonder, as a kid, kind of looking at, say, a poster of a fantastic athlete in his prime, and there's always, like, if it's a basketball player, there's always that defender that's trying to get up and just can't make it, or that guy trying to make the tackle and just doesn't quite get there. Who is the poor unfortunate whose head you knocked that over before you volleyed it into the top corner?
I think her name is Laura Heffernan. She actually Facebooked me a few days ago just to say, after the match, actually, she came up to me and shook my hand and said, Jesus, I'm never going to lift that down. And I just kind of laughed and laughed it off. And then she obviously Facebooked me saying, Jesus, I thought people at the match seeing it was bad. Now the whole world is saying, Jesus, thanks very much, type of thing. So in fairness to her, she was nice and she gave me a quick message and stuff, which was nice of her.
How does it feel to think that 1.8 million people have seen that video?
1.8 now, I believe. There's only 1.6 the last time. No, it's crazy. Obviously, like, when we put it up, we weren't expecting this, obviously, but I looked at it at 20,000 and thought, Jesus, this is ridiculous. This is great. We couldn't believe what was happening. And then, obviously, Matt Fissier retweeted it, and a lot of people looked at it again. And then, with the other celebrities looking at it, more and more people have been viewing it on YouTube, which is great. So as I said, I've been saying all week, it's great for women's football in Ireland, it's great for the Bulgarian Women's National League, and hopefully this will kind of draw more attention to the games and get more people, get more cameras at games, and hopefully catch a few more.
Absolutely. Because I think the reality is, obviously I'm involved in the women's game as well over the last decade or so, but the reality is that there's goals of a, maybe not quite that quality, but of a similar standard week in, week out in the competition, and just purely because of the lack of profile and maybe the lack of TV cameras at the grounds, these things aren't seen by the general public, but the standard of football is extremely high, right?
Yeah, well, I've been saying that all week, every interview I've done, I've been saying that, like, there's some smashing players in the league, like, even just on team rounds, we have the likes of Anya Gorman, Julianne Russell, Sarah Lawler, up front with me, obviously, has been brilliant the last few years, Dora Gorman, I don't want to keep naming names.
You started name dropping there, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
The whole team now,
you're going to get yourself in trouble.
We have a lot of really, really good players in our team, like, going from young players to experienced players, like the likes of Susan Bourne, who, like, has just been there for the last few years, and it's great to have in the team. But not just with team, and there's so many players around the league, like, obviously, you know, the young players at Raheny, they have the likes of Siobhan Killeen, Katie McKay, there's so many good players around, and any of them players will have the like ability to produce something as good as that, or even better. Like, it's gone a bit far, but like, there are players in the league who are like really, really good, and I think it's great. And this has been great for the last few days, obviously getting this exposure. So it just shows that if there's more interest put in, how quick it can be, it can get a lot of exposure, and hopefully get more cameras, as you said, at the games, and get more people.
Okay, well, listen, Stephanie, we always let the guest on the show select the music that plays us out. What song have you chosen for us?
Avicii, Wake Me Up. Perfect. My favourite song of the minute, so.
It's as good a song as any. And my guest this week is internet sensation and Irish and Piemont United women's soccer superstar, Stephanie Roach. Stephanie, thank you very much for joining us. And
No problem, as I said,
we will be finishing the show with Avicii, Wake Me Up. You can listen back to this show on www.sportingspotlight.com or on the podcast on iTunes if you want to listen back to it. My name is Breffin Early. Delighted you've joined us for the last half hour. Stephanie Roach, thank you very much for joining us. And it is Avicii, Wake Me Up.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. Well, that's fine by me.